Good afternoon. This is Mike Regan and with Transact Technologies with another session of On the Record with Doug Duncan. And Doug is no stranger to our airwaves. Last year at this time, we had the opportunity to interview him, but whenever we get a chance to get Doug's comments and thoughts, we want to do so. So I'd like to welcome you, Doug, to Transact's On the Record, and give me an update on what's going on at FedEx and FedEx Freight these days.
Well, thanks, Mike. It's great to be with you again. Obviously, things at FedEx are very busy. At FedEx Freight, we're obviously finishing up the integration with of Watkins, which is now FedEx National, and we've pretty much got that behind us, so that hard work is done. And of course, FedEx is actually making acquisitions all over the world, places like China and India, so mine is just a small part of the puzzle.
Well, when we talk about infrastructures, we'll talk about a little bit later on, are they going to use your expertise to single-handedly improve the infrastructure in India and China, Doug?
No, I'm pretty well relegated to the U.S., so we'll see how well I can do in the U.S.
Well, you know, there are not enough challenges for you there in the infrastructure area. You know, Doug, last year we went through all the challenges for the industry. We had the issue of infrastructure, drivers. We sat through another session today in which you and some of your contemporaries and cohorts there addressed those issues. But one of the things that I've been trying to highlight with our audience is it seems like what we're doing mostly is talking, and I don't necessarily see a lot of tangible progress made in addressing these issues. Am I overlooking something?
No, I think your observation is correct. I think we need to do a lot more, and the good news is I think the research is done now, and I think everybody buys into the vision that 20 years from now you're going to have twice as many cars and trucks on the highways that you're used to being on with very few highway increases. So, you know, the research is a valuable part of that to help make that case. I think what has to happen now is we have to energize as an industry and as consumers and make our case in Washington. Now, I know the American Trucking Association is really pushing on this issue. We're also part of an active coalition with Tom Donahue and the Chamber of Commerce, where we're going to go forward with, I think his term is a speaker's bureau, where we take, you know, top CEOs around the country and tie them with big customers and customer and shipper groups and begin to make our story in Washington and make our case. But I think that's ours to do. My time spent on Capitol Hill, lawmakers, I think, are very interested in this issue, but, you know, we're only one of 100 complex issues that they have to deal with. So it's going to take a huge communication and a huge education process on our part, and I think we'll be most successful when we do it with both carriers and customers at the same time.
Okay, well, you head up one of the leading industry research groups, and you made a comment at the meeting this morning that I thought was very insightful, which is, before you start talking about highway taxes and how we're going to pay for this, it might be a good idea to first get our arms around how much we're being asked to pay.
Correct.
What the size of the investment is. The last highway bill was $286 billion. Obviously, it had earmarks and, you know, projects of $26 billion. So net on transportation, we had about $260 billion. Through all the activities you've been involved, research and this type of thing, any idea as to what the highway authorization bill, fast forward to the next couple of years when it's going to come up, what do you think that highway bill should look like? Any idea whatsoever?
Well, you know, I was really hopeful that the Mineta Commission, which is now the Mary Peters Commission, would help build that vision of what we have to get to. Because until you have a roadmap, until you have a picture of where you want to get to, you know, the old story, any road will get you there. And it can't be addressed the way it has been in the past with one mode at a time. You know, we have to look at the transportation network as a cohesive unit, and strategic investments are going to have to be made in highway, rail, transit, ports. Even inland waterways are going to have certain investments. And I really believe, and I'm hoping this commission will help us get there, where we can take a long-range look of where we have to get to. Now, we have an awful lot of smart people in logistics in this country. If we can draw that picture of what has to happen between now in 20 years and begin to put the brain power against it of what it takes to get there. And of course, the next thing is what's it going to cost and how we're going to finance it. But I don't know how I can address how to finance it until I know what it is.
So coming back to the question there in terms of dollar size, I know it's just strictly hypothetical, but could you envision a highway bill that comes up in a couple years being $400-500 billion?
I think the numbers are likely to be staggering. And the reason is, you know, 50 years ago, we built an interstate highway system, which was the envy of the world. And unfortunately, I think the last 20 years, we've consumed it with investing precious little back. So we've got a kind of a debt to pay on the infrastructure. So we've got to not only handle the current needs and the expansion needs, we've still got some debts to pay on the back end side of that. But again, that's why I say, let's see how big the price is before we try to decide which financing mechanism to go down. We may need all these finance mechanisms, because my guess is it's going to be a very large number.
Okay. Switching gears a little bit, one of the things that's obviously been out there over the past, you know, 15, 20 years, I was actively involved in the size and weight, as you know, and recognized firsthand that the railroads did not share our passion and enthusiasm for saving billions and billions of dollars. Obviously, fast forward a couple years later, their tactic in terms of getting the freeze, trying to enact a freeze, and SHPA and everything else like that. Do you sense any breakthroughs in the railroads, in motor carriers? I won't use the word collaborating, but the railroads not working against the interest of the motor carrier industry. Do you see any breakthroughs there?
I'm not sure I see the breakthrough there, but I'm not sure that's needed either. You know, if you ask general public, do you want bigger trucks, the answer is no. If you ask the question amid the infrastructure problems, if you ask the question among the environmental issues of, you know, if we can use longer combination vehicles to operate more friendly units to the environment and be more fuel efficient, then I think you get a different answer. So you certainly got the infrastructure debate going on. I think coming right behind that is going to be the issue of energy security and CAFE standards for trucks, and also sustainability. How can we be good corporate citizens and start doing a better job for the environment? Well, what I'm thinking is that when you're addressing all three of those issues, now all of a sudden, longer combination vehicles, heavier trucks, to find better ways to use our assets that are environmental friendly as well as energy security friendly, we'll have a lot more punch and we'll have a chance to get these things across the goal line.
Okay, because the public will see a vested interest in basically supporting those types of causes?
I think so. But again, I'm back to this issue of what's it going to cost to get us 20 years down the road? And when you see that cost, now all of a sudden, more productive vehicles are going to make a lot of sense. When you look at the issues of environment, more productive vehicles make a lot of sense there. I think that gives us the tools and the pieces that will help us bring these issues to the forefront with a lot of support.
Okay, switching gears a little bit, let's talk about the LTL marketplace and the incredibly robust margins and profits that the carriers are winning. For the benefit of our listeners, I'm kidding there, but I just, Doug is laughing.
Did you see the first quarter results?
But a couple weeks ago, I put out an executive briefing that talked about the softness in the marketplace. I got inundated with comments from carriers, whether they were in writing or calls. But one of the things we are seeing is that the last 7-8 months have been charitably a very difficult pricing environment for the LTL carriers. Any thoughts or comments on that?
Well, a couple of things. Obviously, we are in a free market. We're not a regulated industry anymore. So anytime you're in a free market, supply and demand has its impact on the pricing environment. Longer term, I'm far more focused on the things that I can control, which is cost and being more efficient and investing in the infrastructure that it takes to meet the needs of today's supply chains.
Okay.
You know, price is one piece to that. But I will tell you, the bulk of our customers are using us because with our rapid and reliable transportation system, they're able to take inventory out of the supply chain and create even greater value.
So there's a trade-off there.
So there may be some fluctuation short-term, up or down, but I think long-term, I've got to figure out a way to run our company with the best possible cost initiatives and to add the most value to the supply chain. And that's what I can do something about for the long term, and that's certainly where we're spending our time and effort.
Okay, at the meeting today, one of the comments that you made that I found interesting is that you said your economist at FedEx are saying that the economy is in reasonably solid shape, mm-hmm. and that you're looking for some sense of pricing stability, if you will, to come back into the marketplace.
Well, pricing, I didn't say pricing stability.
I don't My know. Words. I put
this,
words
This
there.
Is a very competitive industry, but, you know, that, I think, makes us all better because of that. What we're saying is that whatever softness we're seeing in the marketplace right now for the trucking side is likely to be short-term.
So the prices would for you to expect them to firm up later on?
I think the economy will be very well, and I think we will expand, and our trucking industry will grow. You know, pricing is a thing that's an interaction between the customers and the marketplace and the competition, and I don't know that I can forecast that based on the economy.
Well, if you can, let me know, because I'll take whatever stock picks you're throwing out. Let me offer an alternate theory, if I might, because it's something that we're seeing in our meetings with the carriers there. And that's a theory that I've held to for many years, which says that the trucking industry, to a certain extent, follows the airline industry. So if you want to see what happens in the airline industry or the trucking industry, look at what's happened in the past in the airline industry, perhaps on a broader scale, significantly more players. But one of the things that you saw in the airline industry going back many years ago, Southwest was not even a player.
Right.
Today they're a dominant player. A JetBlue, which didn't even exist years ago, today, you know, is a strong regional air carrier. Is it one of the things we're taking a look at? Is it possible that today's LTL marketplace, as the regionals and the super regionals look to expand their length of haul, expand their operations, that we're really finding that there's a very intense battle shaping up between the long haul national carriers such as the FedExes, the UPSs, the YRCs, ABFs, etc., versus some of the super regionals that are trying to come in and carve out, you know, segment market share from your guys' segment. Is that an impact?
I think to better understand the issue is to look at it from the customer viewpoint, not the carrier viewpoint, because we're in business to serve the supply chain.
Okay.
And how well I do that will determine how successful I am for the future, both from a cost standpoint and a value-added standpoint. So I think you have to look at the supply chain and what they require and who's best serving that supply chain. Now, one of the things that we brought into existence with FedEx Freight, the first carrier to offer a money-back guarantee and provide the kind of service that customers can depend on for today's fast-cycle logistics.
Okay.
We basically copied our big brother FedEx Express and provided an on-time, absolutely positively on-time service that customers could count on and begin to take inventory out of the system. So their cost savings was in the inventory side. But as we did that, more and more customers told us that, you know, not all supply chains are alike. There are parts of the supply chain that absolutely has to have speed and certainty, and there are other sides of the supply chain that needs to have absolute certainty but less velocity. They're more cost oriented than they are, which is precisely why we implemented FedEx National, which we believe we can produce the carrier that will be the low cost producer in that long haul sector to give both sides of the supply chain what they need. So that was why we did that, but it's all about serving the supply chain. You know, that carrier that can give that supply chain what they need with the best value and the best consistency wins. So I don't think it's so much about what we're doing to each other as it's what we're doing to serve that supply chain.
Okay. Moving on here, if I go in and look at a couple of areas, the question that I've asked in the past to UPS, for example, is the bundling of services,
mm-hmm.
Where there seems to be an increasing focus by several of the carriers that have the capabilities to grab a larger share of that particular customer's volume, if you will.
Right.
Can you speak to that issue? or kind of, you know.
Well, that's clearly why FedEx Freight is in existence, and being part of FedEx today is that opportunity. But it's a matter of giving the customer what they want and not forcing the customer to put a round peg in a square hole. You know, some customers want to bundle. Some customers want to make it easy to switch from LTL to package to 100 weight and then to air freight and pick and choose only what they need for their supply chain. And that's certainly what we're trying to do, is to make all of those service available and accessible to those customers to use whichever and however they need to get there. And I think we've made a lot of progress in that area. Some customers may choose not to. Others find it as a huge advantage, and we're certainly working very hard to give them that access to all of our services.
So as a way of differentiating your services, for example, versus the traditional carriers there?
Well, Mike, you and I have been in this business a long time. If you think back, I mean, why we had to make customers modal experts and they could only buy in each of these stovepipes and could never cross train. I mean, why do we have to force the customer to be the modal expert? Why can't we give them solutions
where they
can pick and choose what they want and what they don't want? And, you know, today's supply chain logistics professionals have done a phenomenal job, and most of them are pretty young, and they forget the regulation that you and I understand. All they want is solutions. Okay, they don't understand the stovepipes of modality and don't want to have anything to do with it. So in many ways, we're just giving the supply chain executives today what they really want.
Okay, a couple final questions, and I appreciate your time. Let's talk about security. To what extent do you feel like legislation being mandated by the Congress or just by the government, to what extent will security become an increasingly important factor in helping the customers manage their supply chains?
Well, obviously security is and will continue to be a huge issue. You know, there's been a lot of debate on both sides of this, but I think, frankly, to date, we've found the good middle ground of how to keep things secure but not restrict commerce in this country. I mean, we can't kill the economy by overtraining on the security side, but we do have to secure our country.
Can you do you think you can maintain that middle ground and keep people, like, you know, we defeated the scan all amendment, and yet that refuses to die. And you take a look at some of the things with hazmat, the movement of hazmat and this type of stuff. Can we maintain that middle ground, do you think?
I think so, but you have to work at it. You know, I came to FedEx as part of the Caliber acquisition, and one of the things I was most amazed at is the size of the government affairs organization we have in Washington. And, you know, people in Washington are trying to do the right thing, but they're dealing with complex issues, and I think we have to accept the responsibility to work with them and educate them and to interact with them on these issues to find the middle ground. So it's not a matter of just pointing the finger that they've got to find the middle ground.
Okay.
We've got to go help them.
You have to define it for them.
We have to help them.
Two final questions, and that is, if I were to walk in and, you know, it wasn't going out to the thousands of people that are going to listen to this and say, Doug, what keeps you awake at night? You know, when you're looking at managing a, you know, multi-billion dollar carrier like FedEx Freight, you know, what are the top two or three concerns that you look at and say, man, we better be on top of our game here or else? I mean, are there a couple of items you could identify?
Well, you know, the nice part of my job is they don't allow me in the day-to-day running of the trucking business anymore. But
So you're in denial.
But what's expected of me... What's expected of me is to look beyond the horizon to decide what we're going to do next year and the year after that and the year after that, and begin to work on those issues so that we can be prepared and be there. And I think the three key issues right now are going to be transportation infrastructure, energy security, and sustainability. You know, these environmental efforts so that, you know, we're good corporate citizens and help us to grow into the future, but in a sustainable way. You know, we've got to get off our independence of foreign oil. This energy security issue is going to be huge in the future. And, of course, infrastructure. Those are the three areas that I would bet I'll spend 80% of my time on.
Okay, well, then let me just wrap this up by asking, People are going to be listening out there, and I sense one of the frustrations that people have had in the past is, I'm just a single individual, Doug. What can I do? All right, so let's talk to that person that's sitting out there as they wrap up the listening to the interview, thinking, what would you want me to do? Like tomorrow, a week from now, whatever. What is it that you'd like me to do, Doug?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to set the framework for everybody to get behind. Now, you know, our chairman led an energy security group through the business roundtable, and that legislation is now actually before Congress. I think we're going to have to set some tough mile per gallon standards for both trucks and cars into the future to help us get off our dependence of foreign oil. I think we're going to have to begin to use alternate fuel sources that are more secure for our country, and some of those are going to have costs associated with them, and we're going to have to work hard to mitigate those costs. I'm proud to say we've been implementing the clean EPA engines since the day they came out, and have played a lead role in that, and we'll continue to do that. And, you know, right now we're taking the 07 trucks in, normal replacement cycle with the 07 engines, and I think we'll do very well with that. So we have to accept our role as part of a trucking company, but also as part of the corporate community.
But for me as a shipper, for example, is it going to take gas, oil at, you know, when diesel gets to $3.50, $4 a gallon, or a security incident at a port? Is it, what is it going to take, you know, and specifically, what is there anything I can do?
Well, and that's a good question, and unfortunately I've been somewhat embarrassed in giving the industry answers to that, but, you know, I'm happy to say that, especially on this infrastructure issue, that the ATA is doing a great job now of putting together a coalition where we're going to need shippers' help to take this issue to Capitol Hill. The Chamber of Commerce, we're part of a coalition there, which I think Tom Donahue's got some big plans to marry big carrier CEOs with big customers and big shippers and use that as a way to make our case in Washington. We as an industry have not provided, I think, the framework to get our shippers and our customers involved and carrier groups like NASTRAC and NITLIG involved. And I think we've recognized that, and I think we're very close to asking you to help join the fray.
One other question, as long as I got you. We have a contract coming up in 2008, a couple contracts. Got the ports, from what I understand.
Yep.
And you also have Teamster contracts coming up. Do you see that as being an amicable, with our fellow brethren and the Teamsters and all? Do you see that as being an amicable negotiation?
Well, you know, as a non-union carrier, I'd have to say it's difficult for me to comment because I don't know what's going on there. But obviously, it is an issue of concern, and we'll just have to see how it goes. But I don't know that I can give you much insight to that.
Anything on the ports?
I just don't have the insight to the labor, organized labor, that some of my counterparts would.
Well, I want to thank you for your time. You've been so gracious to NASTRAC, with Knit League, and with all the shipper groups, and I really respect what you're doing, so thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. Always good to talk with you.
Okay.